Hello, howdy, and hi. This is Stories and Stuff, and I'm Joy Bubbles, your storyteller, and this week it's going to be rather abnormal. Oh, well, is it ever normal? But instead of the regular format, I'm going to put up an hour-long interview I had with Bonnie at ACB Radio. And if you'd want to hear it directly for a better connection, I'm sure you could find ACB Radio on the computer, or if you have long distance and want to dial the direct number, 773-572-3166. 773-572-3166 until about December 2nd evening, I guess. Otherwise, just hold on, and here it comes in just a moment.
Thanks to George Fies of Talking Communities for making the software available to record the following ACB Radio mainstream programming. More information is available at www.talkingcommunities.com. ACB Radio is proud to present Books and Beyond. Heard weekly at this time right here on ACB Radio Mainstream. And now here's your host, Bonnie Blows. Good evening, everyone. Well, this is Thanksgiving weekend, and tonight as our guest, we have Joy Bubbles. Many of you are familiar with Joy Bubbles. He has a laser box and tells stories on what he calls Stories and Stuff, and it is some very good stuff. And Joy Bubbles, this was awfully nice of you to do this tonight on Thanksgiving Eve. I really appreciate that. I do want you to know that. Thanks a lot.
It's something to be thankful for that you're willing to take the time to talk to an old storyteller.
Old storytellers are not appreciated enough and have a nasty habit of going to the great beyond, so I think we should appreciate them while we have them. And we live in a soundbite world where people don't appreciate them, so I cherish every old storyteller I know. I knew one growing up who told wonderful stories, so I valued you before I knew you.
Well, thank you. If old storytellers get told interesting things, like One person here that I applied for a grant to one time said my stuff was unperformable and, completely not worth a grant or anything. So I think some people, I call it what I do, the JTM method, the just tell me, like storytelling.
Well, I think just telling stories takes a lot more creativity and in some ways some acting on your part, too. That's, those people with grants, I wouldn't worry too much about them. Well, it's wonderful to have you here, and tonight you are going to tell us some stories. But before we do that, tell me how you got into telling stories. When did you first start doing it, and how did it come about?
When I was 3 years old or so, I had imaginary friends, and I would tell them stories as long as I didn't do it loud enough for somebody visible to overhear and tell me to shut up, but... So I've been telling stories since I was about 3, I guess.
I think that's a way that children people their world, especially if they have a childhood that's lonely.
Yeah, and mine was lonely with the battering in our family. And then when I got to a blind school in Jersey City, I was sexually abused by a nun a number of times and different things. So some of my best friends, my two best friends there, was a brick wall and a sycamore tree. And that sycamore tree was a very, very good listener.
I know there's a jazz artist that does a song about telling stories to a tree named Shy Coltrane. And I always loved that song because I think many people in that frame of mind go to a tree or perhaps an animal to share stories with and all of their feelings with. But anyway, I want us to be able to get started. So why don't you begin with your first story, and then I will talk to you in between that one and the next one.
Well, I actually wouldn't have been on the show tonight had a dog not broken our window back in 1955. It was when we lived in Berlin. Oh, you guessed it. Yeah, that is in New Jersey. You're right. We had me and my sister and my father and family of four, or family of five, really, with Little Scout, the great big German Shepherd dog. Well, he was actually little scout because he was the tiniest puppy, but boy, did he grow to be as big as any big German Shepherd. And one day it was freezing cold. I think we hadn't been able to pay for the heat or something. And Daddy got what I thought was a brilliant idea. He would he brought the charcoal grill into the house and lit it and made sure the house was closed up all tight, and pretty soon we were warm. Well, at 6.5 years old, I did something I never did. I went to sleep during the day. Actually, it was passing out. It just felt, you know, I was sleepy and went to bed. And my sister had her head laying down on the table. My mother was on the couch, and my father was lying down, passed out, right by the big window in the living room. He didn't know about carbon monoxide, the odorless killer that happens if you light charcoal in the house. And so don't try this at home. But Little Scout, wandering outside, sensed something was wrong, and he jumped at the window, and hard enough to break it. And once he did that, my father, lying on the floor in the living room by the window, cold air started blowing in his face, and he kind of came around and found that he was so groggy, he at first couldn't even stand up. And he hollered for us, and we didn't answer, and he looked around and found us all passed out, and he got us all outside. He said, maybe there's some kind of gas in that charcoal or something. And he could barely walk. When I first started hearing voices after I was gradually coming to, I couldn't figure out what words meant. But an hour or two later, we would have died. So because a little scout, I'm here, and I'm a storyteller. And, you know, some days of life, you know, you have to get through. They're a little tough. But when I think about how wonderful it is being alive, big hugs and warm baths and a lot of laughs, and a lady in Australia that decided to fly over here and adopt me, and so many adventures, like when I was 3 telling stories to my imaginary friend, I never could have dreamed of being on a show like this. And it's I partly have to give credit to Little Scout.
Well, I give credit to people, too, to all the people who believed in me and who cherished the feeling that I could accomplish more than I knew I could, and I think that's just one of the things we have to be thankful for. And your story shows just how powerful and how helpful even small animals can be.
Yeah, I always wonder, you know, what did he sense? I mean, you know, normally if he was wanting to get in, he just scratched a while and then whimpered and walked away, but this time something was different. You know, it's amazing how dogs have this intuitive knowing. There was one that was rejected from some daycare centers and stuff, and I used to go to a play group in Orono, Minnesota, a suburb of Minneapolis. And it was a wonderful play group, but that lady, Edna, loved to have these rowdy, noisy kids and give them a chance to really play wonderfully. Well, this guy, kid named Zach, he was about 4 at the time, 4 years old, or close to 5, and he was known as Thunderfeet. One of the things he'd like to do is jump up the basement steps a couple times, a couple steps at a time, open the door and slam it as hard as he could and shake the whole house, it seemed like, thunder through the upstairs, all the rooms. We'd hear his feet overhead thundering. And then he'd get to the other end of the house and open the door and leap down in the basement a couple steps at a time, land on my lap full force, saying things like, "Hi-ya!" You know, but yet, with all of that and all the, you know, the people that said he was just, you know, so hyperactive, one day I was outside, and suddenly him and his friend Jennifer, they were silent for 15 minutes. You could imagine the mothers came out wondering just what the in the world was happening. And it was an ant on my T-shirt. He was watching it very carefully. So was Jennifer. And so, you know, when kids find something interesting, they can be quiet. And he's very observant. One day in the grocery store, he jumped out of the cart that he was in and ran over to a man. He'd seen the man crying and said, I'll help you cry. And the man picked him up and hugged him, so of course the mother ran over to see what was happening, and it was a man from a former Soviet country. I think it was Latvia. And he was in the grocery store, and he was just looking at all the choices compared to what they had over there. And he had never seen all the abundance and everything so much. You know, he was by himself, and it just overwhelmed him. He was crying. Couldn't really figure out how to make a choice. So Zach's mother helped him buy groceries and took him home and unpacked them and invited him over for dinner. And he surprised Zach with a doll. Well, I better not call it a doll. An action figure. And it was an army man, probably from the Red Army, a big commander. And the man said, you know, Zach, there's a secret about this doll. Can you guess what it is? And Zach couldn't. And the man pushed a little thing on the doll. It made a wood, or the action figure. And it opened. And there was another soldier inside. And pushed the button, that soldier opened. And there was another soldier inside. And that soldier, there was like five soldiers before he got finished. Zach had a whole little army. And you know, a kid that can be called Thunderfeet is also sensitive enough to run over and help a man cry.
I believe that shows the perception and just intuitive understanding that little children have. How many adults would go up to somebody and say, I'll help you cry? A child will just be with you right where you are.
Yeah, there was a story last spring, actually. I won a Keeper of the Oral Tradition award for it, so it's interesting how, you know, some people can, you know, just because somebody says your story isn't any good or anything, I get people that say stuff like that. Somebody else will hear it and find some value in it, and that's one reason I appreciate you, you know. And the story that I won the award in Australia, actually, I tell them over the phone, it all started, like so many things do with me, when the phone rang. And because of that, I remember what I had for lunch on Monday. Well, it was Monday, December 11th, 1989. A lady called, and, you know, I answered the phone. She said, oh, yeah, I read some articles about you, Joy Bubbles, and I wonder if you'd like to come over and play with my little girl, Jessa. And I said, well, how old is Jessica? So she had to correct me on that name, too. She said, no, she's Jessa. And how do you spell that? J-E-S-S-A. Oh, J-E-S-S-A. You know, I'd sing it so I'd remember it. Well, how old is Jessa? 4 years old, and mother said. And, oh, that's a wonderful age. Yeah, we'll have so much fun. She'll have so much to tell me about her imaginary friends and names of her dolls, and we can play, and she'll have so much to talk. And the mother was trying to interrupt me, and when I paused, she said, Joy Bubbles, I'll understand if you don't want to come. It sounded like she was about to cry. My little girl, Jessa, a couple years ago, she saw her father, my husband, get shot and killed. And about a week later, she stopped talking. So if you don't want to come, you know, I'll understand. And I thought to myself, well, how in the heck does a blind person communicate with somebody that can't talk? And then I thought, well, you know, what I'm about, you know, having a childhood now, and, you know, where I survived the sexual abuse and didn't have a childhood as much when I was little and stuff, and having it now, what it's about is play. Play is what will communicate. We don't have to talk. We'll play. So I told Jessa's mother, sure, I'll come. At least we'll try it. So she picked me up Monday morning, and it got to be our Monday morning routine. She asked me, what do you need? Money's no object. I have contacts all over the world. She was always talking like that. And I said, well, maybe some old paper towel rolls and, you know, full of paper towels and, oh, some cellophane and some paper to crush maybe. And so we had four full rolls of paper towels there. The cellophane, when I started crunching it and kind of bouncing on it, Jessa was doing that, playing with it, the cellophane like I was, and her mother would give me a, you know, a play-by-play kind of thing on what Jessa was doing, you know, and she loved the bag. She was kind of putting the paper kind of around her and rolling around, and it was making a terrific sound. Well, I picked up one of the paper towel rolls, and I was just kind of holding it, and Jessa grabbed the end of the paper towel that was hanging down and ran. So I gently let the roll unroll as she was running. And she got more and more excited and smiling and stuff and jumping around. I mean, as that thing got longer, it was the longest paper towel she had ever seen. She had never unrolled a whole roll of paper towels herself before. So she kept running every which way, and the towel got longer, and it was surrounding her and going over top of her and in her feet, and everything like that. And finally, I ended up with the booby prize, or maybe the hoo-hoo prize, I guess, the empty paper towel roll, you know, the tube. And so there was nothing left to do but to sing through it, you know, when you talk through the tube, you know, when you talk through a paper towel tube, it kind of sounds funny. So I just made up this little song, you are special, you are special, yes you are, yes you are, Jessa, you're so special, Jessa, you're so special, yes you are, yes you are, J-E-S-S-A, Jessa, you know, and so we decided it was going to work, you know, we could communicate by play. Hey, I was there, I'd come every week, and I had a starfish on my head, you know, big old stuffed starfish, and she'd knock it off, and I'd put it up, and she'd knock it off, and we were having so much fun, you know, so I decided to, you know, do some sounds, and so I decided to bark a little bit, you know, and maybe like the puppy, you know, or maybe the kitty cat. And then I decided to do the baby, you know. Always have to do the baby. And then I started crying, like, you know, you have to cry when you're a baby. And what Jessa did, she didn't put her hand over my mouth to shut me up. She put her hands on my eyes, I think to catch the tears. And it was something like that every week. I think one week when we really, really came together, Jessa's mother came down. I brought a nap mat with me because I love to just push it at the ends that would all fold up and say, a mat for a nap is a nap mat. Nap mat, you know, because I like the sound that's in nap mat. And came back down to the basement, and the mother said, Joy Bubbles, there's a sleepy little girl right in the middle of your nap mat. And, you know, want me to wake her, you know, so you can play. And I said, well, I'll tell you what, I'll play silently, and I'll just lie down on the floor. And so I laid down just a couple feet away from the nap mat and got still. And before long, we were breathing together, and we got stiller, and it got quieter. And there was something magic as we came together. And we just lay there still for a good while, just breathing together. And it was something that was so magic, the mother said she dared not even speak. And then, as good as it started, as suddenly as it started, it just ended. Jessa just jumped up and ran off and started playing again. But it was something that you have to feel, you know. And so many nights I dreamed of what Jessa's voice would sound like. You know, I didn't think I'd ever hear it or anything. And another time I was there playing with Bubbles. And we were playing in big tubs, you know, and Jessa would put the little cup in my hand, and she loved to dump the big cup into it. And I guess so it would overflow. I think she loved the thing of things overflowing. And she would sink pans that were floating, and they would sink, and then she'd dump it out, and it would float again and squeeze out. We had a lot of sponges. And she picked up the cup, and I suddenly got a surprise. The water didn't spill into the pan. She spilled it all over my T-shirt. Still got that T-shirt. It said children should be seen, heard, and believed. And that's the one I'm wearing right now, as a matter of fact. Same old T-shirt. And luckily you can't see how old it is. But anyway, I was all wet. A little surprised. And I thought I heard a sound. I must have imagined that I thought I heard something like, or something like that. But it couldn't be. And then just a little while, all of a sudden, bubbles, bubbles. And it was Jessa's voice. I mean, it was one of those times, is this really real? Bubba, bubbles, she said even louder the third time. And we were hugging and crying. Mommy was crying, and the man that was there was going to take a picture, but he forgot to take something off the lens or something. And it was just one of those times. I really don't remember what happened the next few minutes. But it just happened, you know, on that Monday, December 11th, 1989. And after things quieted down, Jess's mother, who I had found out was rather wealthy, asked me, she said, I want to get you something to remember this day. You know, and money's no object. You ask for what you want. And I thought, oh, good. If money's no object, I don't have to ask for an expensive thing just because she has money. I can ask for what I want. And I said, oh, you know what I'd really love if you could get me that? It's a big bowl of just peas. I just want, I love peas. And, you know, usually they're like, oh, just a little bowl and they're mixed with other parts of a meal. I want a meal of just peas. And she seemed a little surprised and said, well, I've got a bag of frozen peas. Oh, that would be wonderful. You know, so a few minutes later she came to me as she was getting the peas ready and said, you know, you're bound to want something more than peas. I said, well, actually I do. One of the most precious things you got. And what's that? And I said, for you to be here and not have to hurry off, you know, and so we can eat lunch together. And I said, your time is one of the most precious things you got, you know. And so she was starting to cry and came over and said, honey, push this right here. And I said, what's that? And she said, that's the off button on my pager. And I got the idea that she doesn't push that too often. She went over to the other room in the phone, and I heard her making the call, and she said, no, you're just going to have to run the meeting without me. I'll tell you later. I just can't be there, and I'll just tell you later. I got to go. And she was back, and we ate peas. You know what? There was so much love in those peas. Haven't you kind of walked in the room when people have been talking or something? You just feel something? In those peas, you could feel it, and it was strong. And right in the middle, Jessa reached her hand in my big bowl, and she decided, you know, it was her turn. She just reached her fist in and got a handful of peas, and all of, you know, mother got her a big plate, and she was rolling them around, and all of a sudden she said, Mommy! That was her very next word after the Bubba Bubbles, an hour or so before. And we ate peas. And, you know, that's not the end, though. One time, the mother called me one night, a couple years later, said I was at a philanthropy meeting, and I just couldn't wait to call you, honey. You know what we had for dinner? I said, I bet I could guess. Was it chicken hearts and gravy? No, it wasn't chicken hearts and gravy, honey, but you know what? I'll never, ever eat peas, be able to eat peas again without thinking of you, sweetheart. And then there was Jessa, you know, in her 8 or 9 year old voice, she said, you know, I know how you love the number 5, because I decided to be 5 years old forever, you know, and having a childhood now. She said, I know how you love the number 5, and I know how you love peas. I found just the right little book to read to you. 5 peas in the pod. And she did. And, you know, it was nice getting validated with the award in Australia and everything. But really, there's no award, I don't think, that was any bigger than that day, hearing Jessa's little voice and saying those first words. And so now you know why I remember what I had for lunch on December 11th of 1989, that Monday.
I completely agree with you that hearing a voice you don't expect to hear is one of the best gifts any of us can ever have. What I loved about that story, too, was your imitations. You do wonderful imitations, Joy Bubbles, really. The dogs were, and the babies especially, were exceptional. I know I probably sound like a child myself, but I guess if ever there is an hour in which I can just go ahead and be a child along with you, I guess this is the one.
Yeah, we all have that right, you know. It's like when I was working on, you know, deciding the best gift I could give myself was to forgive the nun that abused me, you know, and not so much for her or anybody, it's for myself. And finally, you know, somebody said, oh, you ought to sue them or something like that. They don't have anything to give me. They may have helped take my childhood away, you know, in a way, but they don't have it to give me back. I have to find that in experiences with Jessa and swings and things like that. As a matter of fact, I wrote a little poem, a story in rhyme, which a lot of poems are, during the time of forgiving. It's about forgiveness. Well, it's based on actually a lady that called me and named Lisa and told me what happened, what she did when she was little. You know, the things that kids get into, especially kids with scissors? Well, it just demanded to be written into rhyme, so here it is, called Lisa and Lisa by Joy Bubbles. Lisa and Lisa, their names are the same. What Lisa did to Lisa is such a terrible shame. Sometimes kids in nursery school, without meaning to, can sure be cruel. Lisa's ponytail was so long and fine, Lisa had to have it. It's better than mine. When all the other kids lay down to rest, Lisa slipped off her cot with cunning and zest. In her bare feet, she so silently crept right to the drawer where the scissors are kept. So very quiet, back to Lisa's bed, where she snipped, snipped, snipped at the back of her head. Lisa smiled to herself and said a silent hooray when the ponytail finally came clean away. How they laughed at poor Lisa when the kids awoke. Oh, look at her head. Is this some kind of joke? Would someone please tell me what's this all about? Lisa ran to the mirror. She soon found out. She started to cry and then to wail. Somebody stole my ponytail. Lisa felt so sorry to see Lisa cry. She moaned, why did I do it? Oh, why? She said, I'm so sorry. What a bad thing to do. Then she held Lisa's hand and she cried too. It hurts us too when we hurt others. We're all connected. We're sisters and brothers. But this is not where the story ends, because Lisa and Lisa are still good friends.
Joy Bubbles, I think you're going to have me crying here soon if you don't stop. And I have to somehow get through another half hour of this. These are wonderful stories. This is great. Oh my gosh, they're wonderful. I never heard that before. That is really beautiful. Awesome. You know, I wanted to get back to one thing you mentioned that keeps coming up in my life. In fact, it did just last night with a friend, this idea of playfulness. As adults, we get so caught up in life, we forget to play. And so sometimes we have to relearn it. So you're not the only one who had to relearn how to play or decide to be a child. I think we can all decide to be a child, and we can all decide to learn to play at whatever age we happen to be. And I think playfulness is a mother or father, if you will, of happiness, true happiness.
They say that the most advanced animals are the ones that play, like the otter and, you know, the more intelligent. You don't see, like, ants playing or anything, you know. Well, maybe uncles do, but I think, you know, learning how to play when we can... Somebody said the essence of genius is for to be able to hold on to childhood as long as possible through your old age. I'm going to tell you a scandal here in my life, one of these secret things that, you know, my PhD isn't really accredited. It's from a diploma mill. I got a regal, parchment, wonderful PhD in eternal childhood. It took like 14, 16 days or something like that to get it. That's a long time for a child to have to wait for a PhD, but some guy in theology said his took even longer, and he didn't get it from a diploma mill. But anyway, I got this thing, and there's even a Latin word for eternal child, puer eternus, E-U-E-R, and then A-E-T-E-R-N-U-S, puer eternus. You could get a button made like that, you know, and you'd get to talk about play. People would come up and ask what your button means, and, you know, you could tell them about play and everything.
That's fascinating. You're certainly knowledgeable. Tell us more.
Your adventures are going to come from, and so many of them do seem to be related to the phone. I could tell, you know, what the push-button tone is by sound, you know, when you push it. And I was riding in Metro Mobility one day, our paratransit, and on the radio, they played a record. You can tell this wasn't recent. And it was by a Christian group called Whiteheart. And the song is called Hotline. I've heard it's way out of print now. But anyway, since it was like about a hotline to God, it had some push-button phone tones at the beginning. And I remembered the number. I heard them and knew what number it was, and it was a 10-digit number. And I said, I've got to dial that when I get home. And so I remembered it, went to the phone and dialed the thing, and a lady said, hello. Sounded very nice when she answered the phone, so I took the chance, and I said, there was a record. I heard your phone number, the tones of your phone number on. I could tell tones by ear.
and it's a group called Whiteheart. Have you ever heard of Whiteheart? Well, of course I have. You know, Mark, my son, is the leader of the band. I didn't know that. Did you put my phone number on the record? That rascal. And so we talked an hour, and one day I called the newspaper, a little bulletin board column in the Pioneer Press, and they put it in there. And lo and behold, somehow it got to that Mark Gersmel's number in Indiana. She read it and sent the paper a note saying, yes, indeed, he talked to me, and it was a wonderful conversation. So you just never know when and where your adventures are going to come from.
One of my models in life is to see life as an adventure every day, because adventure is opportunity knocking. And if you can see your life that way, it will be exciting and, for the most part, be pleasurable. Not always, but often.
Yeah, you know, and when you're blind, you know, I'm totally blind, and, you know, you never know when you're being watched. Play is powerful for those who do it and are with it, and also for those that just watch. Well, me, one of my very favorite good stinks, I like to say something when it's really, well, I really like it, I say it stinks so wonderfully, and that's chlorine water in the swimming pool. I just love that smell of where the chlorine mixes and filters with all the soda and stuff they put in pools. And I saved up for a long time to be able to stay in a motel for a while so I could play in the pool all day. And I was going to go a week later, you know, get one more paycheck, but I decided I just have to go this week. I can't wait another week for the chlorine water. It stinks so wonderfully. So I went a week early. And within 5 minutes after I checked in, I was down in the pool. The lady, the motel person, saw me, and she said, how did you get out of your room and down to the pool so fast? And I told her about chlorine water. Well, I was so happy to be in there. I was jumping up and down and splashing, and I said to myself, you know, out loud, ooh, I'm getting all wet. And, you know, kids are so literal. They said, well, that's because you're splashing yourself, mister. Oh, I see. Well, you know, I just love to be splashed. And one of the kids said, we could splash you. I said, oh, you probably forgot how. I bet you don't even know how to splash, do you? And one of them said, you asked for it, mister. And so I started getting splashed wonderfully. There was the little the jumping around splash, the scoop up and clap your hand splash, so it would go way up in the air and come down in drops. And I told the kids, that's chlorine. And then there was a splash that was all the way around me, you know, so they'd make sure they got me in every direction. They were all splashing differently. And then their mother happened to come down and started to yell at them, and I said, oh, no, I told them how much I love to be splashed. And so the kids, they brought this great big ball down, and I was trying to sit on it, and I think I may have the longest time stayed almost 2 seconds before I kept falling off. And then the kids climbed on me, and I said, I'm going to make you fall off. But, you know, I leaned every which way and shook and twisted, and they were such good hangers-oners. And the next day, you know, the pool opened at 6, so I got down at 6, and the kids said, where were you? We've been waiting for you. They got there at like 5:30 or something, and the man at the pool let them in because they were so eager. And I was there all day, and on the very last day, a lady came up to me and said that, you know, she started crying and holding my hand. And she said, I just want to thank you. I had to come back. I just wanted to thank you. I'm glad you're still here. And I said, for what? And she said, well, I came to this hotel. It was the Quality Inn in Memphis, and it's by the river. I don't think it's still there, but one person on eBoys had actually been there and knew about this long hall that you can stand in and you can look right down into the pool. And that's what this Ruth was doing, the lady that thanked me. And she said, I was watching you. I've never seen anybody enjoy a pool like that, you without your eyes and everything. And she said, well, the reason I came here, I decided that just my husband died and I just couldn't make it. And I came to kill myself. I was going to take my life. I had plenty of pills and way more than enough. And I was going to stay around for about 2 days and relax. And I was going to do that on Sunday. And I just, watching you, I'd never seen anybody enjoy a pool like that, and I just burst into tears, and she said, and I went to my room and called my friend, said it was an emergency, and she came, and we threw the pills away, and I went to the hospital and signed a contract there. I'm going to stay with this friend while I am getting my life together and everything. And I told her I wasn't even supposed to be there this week. So she called me later and wished me happy birthday, and I was able to use one of my most atrocious puns on her. I said, you know, Ruth, if you'd have done that at the hotel, you know, it'd be a ruthless world. And also, I had another surprise there, too. The mother of the kids, she said, you know, let me know when you're going to eat lunch, and we'll put it on our bill. Well, I just snuck off, and I wasn't going to, I was too bashful to ask for that, you know. She saw me, and she said, I'm going to fix it so you can't sneak off like that. She made arrangements with the restaurant, so any time I ate, it was on her bill. And so it didn't matter that I went a little early and, didn't wait for that next paycheck. And I was awfully glad to be there when Ruth was watching me.
I'll bet you were. And, you know, the thing about Thanksgiving is that one of the things that we have to be most thankful for Thanksgiving is the life that we lead. And for the part you played in hers is really tremendous and something I'm sure you'll never, ever forget.
And it all goes together, like with, Little Scout. If he hadn't broke the window, maybe Ruth wouldn't be alive. Or a lady got to go on a ship cruise, an ocean liner cruise in Florida, all because of me talking on the phone on the radio one night. I was talking about eternal childhood. It was just after I had first started being a child in 1988 when my big conversion happened and stuff. And so this talk show in St. Petersburg had me on for an hour about, you know, eternal childhood and everything. And right after the show, this woman named Elizabeth called, and she was just crying and crying. She said she wanted to call in on the show. She had been a child for a long time, but she didn't know anybody else in the world was like that. You know, rechilding, as we call it. Redoing the past so as to make a support in the present. Anyway, she was talking about her divorce and everything, and her finally got a divorce. Her husband would break her toys or, you know, give them away in front of her, or make appointments with therapists that she didn't even want and all this stuff. When she finally got divorced, she said, I said, where are your toys now? Do you have, oh, they're hidden real good. You know what? I just realized I don't have to keep those toys hidden. And so at 3 in the morning while we were on the phone, she was up knocking over things in the attic, rummaging around with her flashlight, finding where she had it labeled as bed linens, and there was toys hidden in there, you know, and getting them down into the light of day, or at least the light of her living room, and it was just a wonderful thing. And so she decided to form a group, you know, SPICE, supporting people in childlike enjoyment. And where really could be Everchild, as she was calling them. And well, she had a little group going, and people would meet and stuff like that. One day, for instance, one lady that almost never talked there, suddenly she said, I have plans. I talked to a retired kindergarten teacher, and I found a kindergarten we can use for the weekend and a couple more teachers, and we could have, you know, a good old-fashioned kind of kindergarten playing with finger painting and all this stuff on Saturday. So a bunch of these people went down there in a limousine drinking Kool-Aid all the way and played all day, and the kindergarten teachers even loved it because they were able to do kindergarten in the old, before academics took over kind of way. And on the way home, there was a man, he said, I've never been able to have a doll. And they stopped at a toy store, and he, I think he bought about 10 dolls. He couldn't decide, so he said, oh, heck, let's have, you know, let's get all of them. And, you know, so they even set up a discount thing card at the toy store. Well, this other lady that hadn't heard the radio show, she was in her therapist's office one day, said, I just wish I could just become a child again for fun, and I wish there was a way. And the therapist said, well, there's somebody that I heard that had an unusual name, and I think he was in Indianapolis, Indiana or something. And I recorded it. I don't know if I still have the tape. Well, it turned out she did. She gave it to Elaine, And Elaine went to the toy store, got the courage to go to a toy store. She had called me, and she went to the toy store, and they said, oh, are you part of that group? What group? Well, anyway, they introduced her to the group with Elizabeth, and Elizabeth and Elaine became really good friends, and Elaine, was on a low pension and everything, and she was, like, I think, late 60s maybe at that time. And Elizabeth had extra money, and, you know, so anyway, Elaine and Elizabeth went on a ship cruise together, and they set up toys on the deck, and they both went in the ball crawl thing where you crawl among all those balls, and they were playing and having so much fun, and people just had so much fun looking at them playing and taking pictures, and people would sit down at the table with the finger paints. And it was funny, just answering the phone and being on a radio show eventually led Elizabeth and Elaine to be able to be on that ship cruise together, that things that Elaine would never experience. And it was also interesting where Elaine had these imaginary friends, and her mentally ill mother when she was little, when Elaine was little, said Elaine shouldn't have these imaginary friends. And so the mother grabbed them up from where they were, where Elaine was talking to them, put them in a burlap sack and ran out. Elaine was about 3. And said, I'm going to kill these once and for all, and put the burlap bag down and ran over them with the car. And Elaine was screaming and pulling at the car, trying to stop it, begging Mother not to. But she ran over the imaginary friends a number of times in that burlap sack. Well, Elaine, in her late 60s at that time, I did, you know, little songs and rituals, and I said, this will bring your imaginary friends back. And sure enough, they both came through the window, and they said, oh, we slipped out through the holes in that bag. We weren't hurt. And she got them back. And, you know, things like that that are magic and symbolic can really mean a lot. What's invisible is essential. What's invisible to the eye is what's really most essential. So I think just being a child is a different way of seeing.
And as adults, if we're lucky, we try to keep that alive and look at the world with a sense of wonder. We do it at holidays, but we have a hard time doing it the rest of the time. And we have all kinds of excuses for why we can't do it, but if we're going to live a really joy-filled life, to borrow part of your name, we have to learn to do it.
Yeah, and speaking of my name, something I didn't know when I went legally changed my name, in 1991, I didn't realize it for a number of years. You know, it's a 10-letter word, but the first two letters, J-O, are the first letters of my father's name, Joseph, first two letters. And E-S, at the end of Joy Bubbles, is the first two letters of my birth mother, of my biological mother, named Esther. So my family is hidden in the name.
That's really interesting. Is anyone dying to ask Joy Bubbles a question?
Hello, this is Gary Woodden. That story that he told about this this girl who hadn't spoken for a long time, that sounds like that can't be anything more than a miracle, you know, getting her to talk like that. And I think it probably sounds like you really helped a lot of people over the years. I heard somewhere on a show that the kids today, you know, when they go to kindergarten, like I remember when we went to kindergarten, you know, there was always the fascination that we had for, to learn things, and we always wanted to learn things, but maybe the school systems kind of, they hammer that out of us when we start going to regular school, you know. I mean, maybe that, I don't know if that's the right word, but maybe that's what happens. Maybe if kids learn at their own pace, you know, if they're given the chance to do so.
Yeah, you really can't stop kids from learning, of course, unless they go to school. You know, there's the 3 R's. Well, also there's the 3 M's of education, modified to meet their mold. And regrettably, that so often, it happened to me. I was told, you know, so many times how dumb I was by some teachers, and, you know, they gave me F's, and how I shouldn't even be in seventh grade. I should be back at Pablum, and other such things that still sometimes play in my head. And I went and threw away my high school diploma and got a GED, because it meant so much more to me, getting something where I was respected and doing it on my own joyful learning, and it had my new name on it. And, you know, you're talking about miracles. There's miracles are all around us like that, and there's also angels all around us. Me and my sister would come home from school, and there was nobody around, and it was pretty quiet, especially when we didn't have the radio, it had burned out, and we would be so quiet, and we would pretend like we heard music. And finally we would, you know, you would almost hear it, and then we really, really did hear real music. The ice cream man, he'd be outside, and it would get louder and louder, and we'd go outside and be jumping up and down, and he'd stop, and he would give us the ice cream we wanted, even when we changed our mind four or five times. Until one day, Daddy gave us some bad news. He said, I've lost my job, and we don't have any money for ice cream. And I used to be able to hide my tears and stuff real good when I was little, and I'd go, oh, Daddy, I don't really like ice cream anymore anyway. Well, that's good, because we can't have any. And my sister was crying, and the next day when the ice cream man came, I was hoping he would just know not to come. We didn't go out, and he kept ringing and ringing, and I was saying, go away, ice cream man, go away. But he didn't, and I went out pretending not to cry and with my sister, and we told him, we don't like ice cream anymore. And he got out of his truck and got down, bent down, you know, to us and said, well, what in the world happened? And so we told him about Daddy with the job. And Mother had already told him not to give us ice cream. She didn't like charity, you know, like months before. And so he knew he was, you know, knew he couldn't just hand it to us. But, you know, the ice cream man, he suddenly remembered, just in the nick of time, as he was starting to walk away, you know what? He said, I have some leftover ice cream today. And I can't sell that, you know. And I'm looking for somebody to do me a favor, help me out, you know. I'm looking for kids maybe about 8 and 10 years old that could eat the ice cream, you know, help me out and take this ice cream for me. Do you know any kids around that could do us that favor, you know? And, of course, we were real saintly when we were little, like kids are. We were willing to go out of our way on a hot Florida day and help somebody like that, you know. And so we offered that we could do it. And, you know, I said, what flavors do you have left? And even when we changed our minds, he still found the leftover in that flavor. And, you know, we were a little cynical. I thought, well, now that he knows we don't have any money, that's the last we'll see of him. Next day he was there. Next day and the next week and next month, 2 whole months, that ice cream man came with leftover ice cream. Until one day we came out and said, Daddy got a job, we can get real ice cream again. And he said, are you sure? And we gave him the money. And you know, that non-leftover ice cream tasted just the same. And a few months later, when we were about to move away, me and my sister wrote him a note in Braille, and we gave it to him. And he said, oh, I can't read with my fingers like you can. And so we have to, you know, could you read it to me? And I said, dear ice cream man. And my sister read, you know, she read a line, you know, she said, you have cold ice cream and a warm heart. And I said, and I will remember you forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. And he said, yeah, I'll keep this forever, and I'll put it in my wallet. And, you know, some angels have wings, and some of them drive ice cream trucks.
When we think back over our lives and the people and things that we're thankful for, I've always been touched by people and how they're placed at precisely and strategically the right place at the right time. It's almost as if it's some sort of puzzle that unravels. A carpet unfolding, a person is placed exactly where they're meant to be at a certain time because they can be of the most help and of the most service to someone. I would like to ask you one last question, though. Do you ever listen to news, or how do you interact with the terrible world of adults, you know, all the stuff that's going on? I mean, I know that you've got to do all the regular things all the rest of us do, pay bills and, you know, make sure you have enough heat for the winter and, you know, the phone is on and all that kind of stuff, but do you ever listen to news or TV, or do you just not, as a child, do you choose not to watch any news or any grown-up things, or do you watch some grown-up things, like on TV or whatever?
I usually don't listen to commercial TV at all, except for, like, the Spelling Bee and the World Cup soccer. But when I go through the newspaper, I do just, on the news that I don't want to hear, I just read the headlines so that I know, you know, enough, you know, what's going on. But what I tend to read is, like, events or, like, in Africa, this foundation that when the people were carrying water 10 miles or something, you know, and it wasn't even pure, they put a water pump right in the village. But that's not all. Instead of just somebody boringly pulling the handle up and down, they hooked a merry-go-round through some gears, and it did the pump. So those kids playing and laughing and talking, you know, got the water. The people had more productive time to do work because they didn't have to spend that all day, you know, carrying water. And it was a social thing. The kids are jumping off the merry-go-round and turning it around for other kids that were sitting on it, and then they take turns. And the pumping water idea, they use that wonderful play energy. And I think there's a lot of potential in, you know, recapturing play and, you know, maybe somebody not being a radical eternal child like me, but at least there's a lot of good in it. I think there's a lot of hidden potential. Some, like some movie star or something endorsed eternal childhood. Boy, somebody's going to get wealthy providing, like, play places where people can go and, you know, rock in rocking chairs that play, you know, music boxes or something, or, you know, finger painting, and just, you know, being able to play together, adults playing together in childlike enjoyment.
Even if you just have a huge, just a larger sandbox that adults can use, it'll probably take off like lightning. That's really interesting to me. I have a friend I talked to just last night who said, as a child, I never knew how to play. I was never taught how to play. I didn't know how to play and had no idea that I should. And she felt that the only way that, well, not the only way, but she felt one of the important ways that a child learns to play is for adults to play with a child. And she said no one ever did that with her. So we were talking about how you have to have the right kind of environment in which to learn to play. And I think there are a lot of adults, stodgy adults in the world, who are so busy worrying about everything that's going on in their lives that they've lost that magic, and they feel guilty if they try to find it by maybe dressing up at Halloween or having holiday parties and things like that, or holiday parties for every possible occasion and event in their lives. But the rest of the time, if they're not at a party, they don't feel like they have the right or the license to play. And that would really make for a very interesting show.
Yeah, I don't know how much time we have left, but if there's time for another story or...
I think we probably have time for another short one, probably a five-minute one or something, I would think.
Well, one Christmas, I looked under the tree, and it was this flat package. It was a fairly thin wrapper, and, you know, I got pretty sensitive fingers. So the book was in a wrapper, and then that was wrapped in gift wrap, but I could still read the Braille right through it, and I said, oh, you've got The Earth, a Great Storehouse by Bertha Morris Parker. And I told Mother, oh, you ruined the surprise. And they were very disappointed. Next Christmas, I didn't get a book like that. Instead, I got this package. It was big as a refrigerator box. And it was huge. I couldn't imagine what could be that big. And finally, I mean, it seemed like forever before Christmas would come. And finally it did, and I opened it. And you know what was in that big box? A box. And in that box was a box. And in that box was a box. And in that box was a box. And finally, about the fifth box in, there was the book, Water Appears and Disappears by Bertha Morris Parker. And Daddy said, honey, you didn't read that one through the wrapper now, did you?
Well, I guess we've all opened Christmas gifts and certainly speculated as to what was in boxes, shook them and heard them rattle and wondered, and parents learn how to be really good at keeping just a little bit ahead of kids.
Yeah, you know, one of the greatest gifts of all, I think, is to just listen to each other, and you giving me the gift of being listened to tonight is just one of the more special than I could even put into words. So instead of using my words, I'll just read a poem by Shel Silverstein. It's called A Little Boy and the Old Man. Said the little boy, sometimes I drop my spoon. Said the old man, I do that too. The little boy whispered, I wet my pants. I do that too, laughed the little old man. Said the little boy, I often cry. The old man nodded. So do I. But worst of all, said the boy, it seems grown-ups don't pay attention to me. And he felt the warmth of a wrinkled old hand. I know what you mean, said the little old man. I know what you mean, said the little old man.
Yeah, that was a good one. I really like that one. Sometimes I think the older I get, the more I think that life does seem to revolve and seems to go in cycles. I mean, I think the older you get, the more you find things that remind you of when you were a kid, and maybe things of that nature, you know, just come back to you.
Yeah, it's, you know, like I say, the things that are invisible, the gift of living, listening rather, the gift of a hug. And I think being a child is just a different way of seeing, being able to see and remember the miracles around us. You know, I think the biggest thing about storytelling, we all have these stories around us, and some of us just kind of forget them and go through a day. But, if this can lead to other people telling each other and sharing their stories, I think the show it won't be in vain.
Well, Joy Bubbles, it's certainly been a pleasure having you here tonight. And before you go, you've given us so much already. But I would like to ask you one last question before we close it down for tonight. I'd like to know what you think is the thing that you're most thankful for Thanksgiving, and what would you hope that other people would be most thankful for?
Well, first of all, I'll answer that, and I want to give my numbers here, stories and stuff. You can hear stories like this every week. I've been doing it for 12 years in Seattle, 206 Feeling, 206-333-5464. And I love to share with people. My home number is 612-871-5555. And I think one of the most things that I'm thankful for is that we can communicate. You know, that not only for the communications equipment, but for people like you willing to share yourself and do shows like this and let people like me, these old storytellers that, you know, this is a whole lot more fun than 3 years old when I'd have to tell the stories into my pillow real soft.
I'm sure you're right, and I agree with you. Well, I thank you for being here, and I want to wish all of you listening tonight a happy Thanksgiving. By the time you hear this, it will have been passed. But you will probably still be involved in the weekend with family and friends and loved ones. Hold them close. Treasure them. And make the most of every time and every day that you have with them. And if any of you would like to write to me with any questions, concerns, or suggestions for guests, or for any other reason, a comment on a show, whatever it might happen to be, please feel free to write to me at this address, Bonnie, B-O-N-N-I-E, at acbradio.org. That's Bonnie at acbradio.org. Thanks so much for joining us tonight for Books and Beyond. I wish you well, and I hope you'll join us again next week when we get together once more to create another lovely edition of Books and Beyond. Good night.
You've been listening to Books and Beyond, a weekly presentation by Bonnie Bloss for ACB Radio Mainstream. Join Bonnie again next week, right here, same time, same place. And if you'd like to participate in the discussion and recording of Books and Beyond, you can do that by joining Bonnie every Wednesday night in North America, Thursday morning at 1 Universal, at www.ourplace.acbradio.org. Click on the politics room, enter your name, follow the prompts, come into the room, and join the discussion. All you need is a working microphone on your computer. You may email Bonnie at Bonnie, B-O-N-N-I-E, at acbradio.org. See you again next week for another edition of Books and Beyond with your host, Bonnie Bloss.
We hope you enjoyed this week's presentation of Books and Beyond. If you have any questions or comments regarding the show or any of the previous shows, please don't hesitate to contact Bonnie at Fillmore Box 7748. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for using Fillmore Productions voicemail. For more information on Fillmore Productions voicemail, or to get your very own Fillmore voicemail box, please call 1-866-4-GET-VMB. That's 1-866-443-8862. Thank you for calling.
Begin speaking at the tone. When you're finished, hang up or press pound for more options. If you are satisfied with your message, press 1. To re-record, press 2. To review your message, press 3. To enter your laser mail security code, press 4. If you are satisfied with your message, press 1. To re-record, press 2. To review your message, press 3. To enter your laser mail security code, press 4. Goodbye.